Chapter 7. Momim. The world is a circle that possesses as many centers as it does men. Agensis, the third analytic of men. Early autumn, 4110, year of the Tusk, Momim. All of Momim had thundered. Chilled by the shade, Icuri Confus dismounted beneath the immensity of the Zitansian arch. His eyes lingered on its graven images for a moment, following panel after panel of captives and spoils. He turned to General Martimus, about to remind him that not even Zitansius had pacified the Skilvendi tribes.
"I've wrought what no man has wrought. Doesn't that make me more than a man?"
Confus could no longer count how many times this breathless thought had beset him, and though he was loath to admit it, he yearned to hear it echoed by others, especially Martimus. If only he could coax the words from him. Martimus possessed the unstudied candor of a lifelong field officer. Flattery was beneath his contempt. If the man said something, Confus knew, it was true. But now was not the time. Martimus stood dumbstruck, staring across the Scuari campus, the parade grounds of the Imperial precincts. Arrayed under the standards of every column in the Imperial army, phalanxes of infantrymen in ceremonial dress filled the Scuari's expanse. Hundreds of red and black streamers undulated in the breeze above the formations, painted with golden prayers. Between the phalanxes, a broad avenue ran toward the towering facade of the Eleusian Forum. The gardens, compounds, and colonnades of the Andiamine Heights climbed high into the haze beyond. Confus saw his uncle awaiting them, a distant figure framed by the Forum's mighty columns. Despite the imperial pageantry, he looked small, like a hermit squinting from the entrance of his cave.
"Is this your first imperial audience of state?"
Confus asked Martimus. The general nodded, turned to him with a faintly doddering air.
"My first time in the Imperial precincts."
Confus grinned. "Welcome to the brothel." Grooms took their horses. In accordance with custom, the hereditary priests of Gil-Geol brought basins of water. As Confus expected, they smeared lion's blood on his limbs and, muttering prayers, cleansed his symbolic wounds. The shrial priests who arrived in their wake, however, surprised him. They anointed him with oils and murmurs, then finished by dipping their fingers in palm wine and tracing the tusk across his forehead. Only when they closed the rite by crying out his new title, Shield of the Tusk, did he understand why his uncle had incorporated them into the ceremony. The Skilvendi were as much heathen as the Kianin. So why not tap into the all-pervasive fervor of holy war? It was actually, Confus realized with some distaste, a brilliant ploy, which probably meant that Skaos was behind it. As far as Confus could tell, his uncle had exhausted whatever brilliance he possessed, especially when it came to the holy war. The holy war. The mere thought of it made Confus want to spit like a Skilvendi, and he'd arrived at Momim only the previous day. Never in his life had Confus felt anything approaching the elation he'd experienced at the Battle of Kaiuth. Surrounded by his half-panicked staff, he had looked across the undecided battlefield and somehow unaccountably had known with a certainty that had made his bones feel like iron. I own this place. I am more. The feeling had been akin to rapture or religious ecstasy. It had been, he later realized, a revelation, a moment of divine insight into the immeasurable might of his hand. There could be no other explanation. But who would have thought that revelations, like meat, could be poisoned by the passage of days? At first, things had gone exceedingly well. After the battle, the surviving Skilvendi had withdrawn into the deep steppe. Some scattered bands continued to shadow the army, but they could do little more than maul the odd patrol. Unable to resist a final twist of the knife, Confus arranged for a dozen captives to overhear his officers lauding those tribes who'd betrayed the horde, Captives who, through daring and ingenuity not their own, later managed a miraculous escape. Not only would the Skjelvendi, Confess knew, believe their allegations of treachery, they would be gratified. Far better that the people defeat the people than the Nansur. Ah, sweet dissension. It would be a long time before the Skjelvendi took to the field with one will. If only dissension were as easily undone. Months earlier, Confess had promised his uncle he would mark his return march from the frontier with piked Skjelvendi heads. To this end, he'd ordered the heads of every Skjelvendi slain at Kyuth collected, tarred, and heaped in wains. But as soon as the Imperial Army crossed the frontier, the cartographers and mathematicians began feuding over the proper spacing of their grisly trophies. When the dispute persisted, the sorcerers of the Imperial Sake, who, like all sorcerers, fancied themselves better cartographers than cartographers, and better mathematicians than mathematicians, intervened. What followed was a bureaucratic war worthy of his uncle's court, one that somehow, following the mad alchemy of injured pride and spite, led to the murder of Erathius, the most outspoken of the imperial cartographers. When the subsequent military inquest failed to resolve either the murder or the feud, Confis summarily seized the most vocal partisan of each faction and, exploiting poorly worded articles of the Martial Code, had them publicly flayed. Not surprisingly, all differences were settled the following day. But if this vexing affair had tainted his rapture, his return to Momum had nearly spoiled it altogether. He found the capital encircled by the encamped Holy War, which had become a vast slum of tents and huts about the city's landward walls. As troubling as the sight was, Confis still expected adoring masses to greet him. Instead, unkempt mobs of Inrithi howled insults, threw stones, and even, on one occasion, tossed burning sacks of human excrement. When he sent his Kidrahil ahead to clear a path, what could only be described as a pitched battle ensued.
"They see only the Emperor's nephew," an officer sent by his uncle explained, "not the man who conquered the Skjelvendi."
"They hate my uncle so much."
The officer shrugged.
"Until their lords acquiesce to his indenture, he provides them only enough grain to survive."
The Holy War, the man told him, was growing by hundreds daily, even though, as rumor had it, the main contingents from Galioth, Saetadon, Conraya, and High Anon were still months away. So far, only three great lords had joined the men of the Tusk: Calmamunus, the Palatine of the Conrayan province of Canampuria, Tharshilka, an earl of some obscure Galioth march, and Cumrezer, the Palatine governor of the Ainoni district of Kutapilath. Each of them had violently rebuffed the Emperor's demand to sign his indenture. The negotiations had since deteriorated into a bitter contest of wills, with the Inrithi lords wreaking what havoc they could, short of incurring the Shrya's wrath, and with Aikuri Zarius III issuing proclamation after proclamation in an attempt to constrain and further coerce them.
"The Emperor," the officer concluded, "is most heartened by your arrival, Lord Exalt General."
Confess had nearly cackled aloud at that. The return of a rival heartened no emperor, but every emperor was heartened by the return of his army, particularly when he was besieged, which was essentially the case. Confess had been forced to enter Momum by boat. And now, the great triumph he'd so anticipated, the all-important recognition of what he'd wrought, had been overshadowed by greater events. The Holy War had dimmed his glory, had dwarfed even the destruction of the Skjelvendi. Men would celebrate him, yes, but the way they celebrated religious festivals in times of famine, listlessly, too preoccupied by the press of events to truly understand what or whom they celebrated. How could he not hate the Holy War? Cymbals crashed. Horns sounded. Completing the ceremony, the Shrial priests bowed and withdrew, leaving him doused in the pungent odor of palm wine. Ushers dressed in gold-chased kilts appeared, and Confis, with Martimus at his side and with his retinue in tow, followed them at a slow march across the crowded silence of the Skuadi. Whole fields of red-skirted infantrymen fell to their knees as they passed, so that, like wind across wheat, they trailed awake across the far reaches of the campus. Confis felt a momentary thrill. Had this not been his revelation, the source of his rapture on the banks of the River Cayuth? As far as my eye can see, they answer to me, to my hand, as far as my eye and beyond. Beyond, a breathless thought. Wanton. A glance over his shoulder assured him that his earlier instructions were being observed. Two of his personal bodyguards followed close behind, dragging the captive between them, while a dozen more were busily marking their passage with the last of the severed Skilvendi heads. Unlike past Exalt generals, he had no parade of slaves and plunder for his emperor, but the sight of tarred Skilvendi heads raised above the campus, he thought, possessed a singular effect. Though he could not see his grandmother among the crowds flanking his uncle beneath the forum, he knew she was there, and that she approved.
"Give them spectacle," she was fond of saying, "and they will give you power."
Where power was perceived, power was given. For his entire life, Confis had been surrounded by tutors, but it had been his grandmother, Fierce Estrella, who had done the most to prepare him for his birthright. Contrary to his father's wishes, she had insisted he spend his early childhood surrounded by the pomp and circumstance of the imperial court. And there she had reared him as if he were her own, teaching him the history of their dynasty, and through it, all the unwritten secrets of statecraft. Confis even suspected she had had a hand in the trumped-up charges that led to his father's execution, simply to guarantee the man would not interfere with the succession should her other son, Icures Arius III, unexpectedly find himself upon the bier. But more than anything, she had ensured, even enforced, the perception that he, and he alone, was heir apparent. Even when he was a young boy, she had crafted him into a spectacle, as though his every breath were a triumph for the Empire. Now, not even his uncle would dare contravene that perception, even if he did manage to produce a son who did not drool or require diapers into adulthood. She had done so much that he could almost love her. Confis studied his uncle once again. He was nearer now. So much so that Confis could make out details of his dress. The horn of white felt rising from his golden diadem surprised the Exalt general. No Nansur emperor had worn the crown of Shigek since the province's loss to the Phanum 3 centuries earlier. The presumption was outrageous. What could move him to such excess? Did he think heaping himself with empty ornaments could safeguard his glory?
He knows. He knows I've surpassed him.
Over the course of his return from the Jayonati steppe, Confis had pondered his uncle to the point of obsession. The real question, Confis understood, was whether his uncle would be inclined to accommodate him as a tool with further uses, or to dispose of him as a threat. The fact that Zorias had sent him to destroy the Skilvendi in no way diminished the possibility of disposal. The irony of murdering someone for successfully doing his bidding would mean nothing to Zorias. Such injustices, as the philosophers would call them, were the bread and beer of imperial politics. No. All things being equal, Confis had realized, his uncle would try to kill him. The problem, quite simply, was that he had defeated the Skilvendi. Even if, as Confis feared, his triumph did not translate into the power to overthrow his uncle Zorias, who suspected conspiracy whenever two of his slaves farted, would simply assume he possessed that power. All things being equal, Confis should have returned to Momum with ultimatums and siege towers. But all things were not equal. The Battle of Cayuth had been but the first step in a larger scheme to wrest the Holy War from Mathanet, and the Holy War was key to his uncle's dream of a restored empire. If Kian could be crushed, and if all the old provinces could be reconquered,
Then Icures Arius III would be remembered not as a warrior emperor like Zitancius or Triamus, but as a great statesman emperor, such as Cafrianus the Younger. This was his dream. So long as Arius clung to this dream, Confis realized, he would do everything in his power to accommodate his godlike nephew. By defeating the Skilvendi, Confis had become more useful than dangerous. Because of the Holy War, everything came back to the accursed Holy War. With Confis's every step, the Forum encompassed more and more of the sky. His uncle, who looked even more ludicrous now that Confis knew what he was wearing, grew still nearer. Though his painted face seemed impassive in the distance, Confis saw, or thought he saw, his hands momentarily clutch the sides of his crimson gown. A nervous gesture. The exalt general nearly laughed. He found few things more amusing than his uncle's distress. Worms should wriggle. He had always hated his uncle, even as a child. But for all the contempt he bore him, he'd learned long ago not to underestimate him. His uncle was like those uncommon drunks who slurred and staggered day after day, yet became lethally alert when confronted by danger. Did he sense danger now? Suddenly, Icures Arius III seemed a great riddle, inscrutable. What are you thinking, uncle? The question itched so much he felt compelled to scratch it with another's opinion. Tell me, Martimus, he said in a low voice, if you had to guess, what would you say my uncle's thinking? Martimus was terse. Perhaps he thought conversing at such a time unseemly.
You know him far better than I, Lord Exalt General.
A most politic answer. Confis paused, struck by a premonition that the cause of Martimus's anxiety went far deeper than the prospect of meeting his emperor for the first time. When had the man ever been in awe of his betters? Never. Should I be afraid, Martimus? The general's eyes remained riveted on the distant emperor. He did not blink.
You should be afraid, yes.
Not caring what his observers might think, Confis studied the man's profile, noting yet again the classic Nansor cut of his jaw and his broken nose. And why is that? Martimus marched in silence for what seemed a long while. For an exasperated moment, Confis felt like striking him. Why deliberate so long over answers when the decision was always the same? Martimus spoke only the truth.
I know only, the general finally replied, that were I emperor, and you my exalt general, I would fear you.
Confis snorted under his breath.
And what the emperor fears, the emperor kills. I see even you provincials have a sense of his true measure. And yet my uncle has feared me since the first evening I beat him at Benjuka. I was 8. He would have had me strangled, had the entire matter blamed on an unfortunate grape, had it not been for my grandmother.
I fail to see.
My uncle fears everybody and everything, Martimus. He's too well schooled in our dynasty's history not to. Because of this, only new fears incite him to murder. He scarcely notices old fears, like me.
The general shrugged imperceptibly.
But didn't he?
He trailed off as though shocked by his own gall.
Have my father executed? Of course he did. But he never feared my father from the beginning. Only later, after the Biaxi faction had poisoned his heart with rumors.
Martimus glanced at him from the corner of his eye.
But what you've accomplished, Lord Exalt General. Think on it. At your command, every soldier here, to a man, would lay down his life for you. Surely the Emperor knows this. Surely this is a new fear.
Confis had thought Martimus incapable of surprising him, but he was taken aback by both the import and the vehemence of his reply. Was he suggesting rebellion? Here? Now? Suddenly he saw himself climbing the steps to the forum, saluting his uncle, then wheeling to the thousands of soldiers assembled across the Squari campus and crying out to them, imploring, no, commanding them to storm the Forum and the Andiamine Heights.
he saw his uncle hacked to bloody rags. The scene left him short of breath. Could it be a revelation of some sort? A glimpse of his future? Should he? But this was rank foolishness. Martimus simply did not see the greater scheme. Even so, everything, the ranks falling to their knees in his periphery, the oiled backs of the ushers before him, his uncle waiting as though at the terminus of some fatally steep chute, had become nightmarish. Suddenly, he resented Martimus and his baseless fears. This was supposed to be his time, his moment of exaltation. And what of the Holy War? He snapped. Martimus scowled but kept his face toward the looming forum. I don't understand. Overcome by a sudden flash of impatience, Confis glared at the man. Why was it so hard for them to see? Was this the way the gods felt when plagued by the inability of men to grasp the grand portent of their designs? Did he expect too much of his followers? The gods certainly did. But perhaps that was the point. What better way to make them strive?
You think, Martimus continued, that the Emperor is more avaricious than fearful, that his hunger to restore the Empire eclipses his fear of you?
Confis smiled. The god had been appeased. So I think. He needs me, Martimus.
So, you gamble.
The ushers had reached the monumental stair leading up to the forum, and now they backed away to either side, bowing. The Emperor was nearly upon them. And where would you place your wager, Martimus? For the first time, the general looked at him directly, his shining brown eyes filled with uncharacteristic adoration.
With you, Lord Exalt-General, and the Empire.
They had paused at the base of the monumental stair. After a sharp glance at Martimus, Confis gestured for his bodyguards to follow with the captive, then began ascending the steps. His uncle awaited him on the highest landing. Scaeus, Confis noted, stood at his side. Dozens of other court functionaries milled among the forum's columns. Everyone watched with solemn faces. Unbidden, Martimus's words returned to him.
At your command, every soldier here would lay down his life.
Confis was a soldier, and as such, he believed in training, provisions, planning. In short, preparation. But he also possessed, as all great leaders must, a keen eye for those fruit that ripen out of season. He knew full well the importance of timing. If he struck now, what would happen? What would, and here was the problem, all those assembled do? How many would throw their lot with him?
With you. I would place my wager with you.
For all his failings, his uncle was a shrewd judge of character. It was as though the fool instinctively knew how to balance the staff against the plum, when to strike and when to soothe. Suddenly, Confis realized he had no inkling of which way many of those men who mattered most would turn. Of course, Gain Kelty, the exalt captain of the Eothic Guard, would stand by his emperor, to the death if need be. But Kemen Khetri? Would the Imperial Sake prefer a strong emperor to a weak one? And what of N'Garu, who controlled the all-important coffers? So many uncertainties. A warm gust of wind sent leaves from some unseen grove skittering across his path. He paused on the landing immediately below his uncle, saluted him. Icuri Zarius III remained as still as a painted statue. Wizened Scaeus, however, gestured for him to approach. His ears buzzing, Confis climbed the last remaining steps. Images of rioting soldiers flashed before his soul's eye. He thought of his ceremonial dagger, wondered whether its temper would be enough to puncture silk, damask, skin, and bone. It would do. Then he stood before his uncle. His expression and his limbs stiffened in defiance. Though Scaeus stared at him with naked alarm, his uncle affected not to notice.
Such a great victory, nephew,
he abruptly exclaimed.
You've brought glory as no other to the House Icuri.
You, Confis said flatly, are too gracious, uncle. A momentary frown crossed his uncle's face. Confis had failed to kneel and kiss his uncle's knee. Their eyes locked, and for an instant, Confis was startled. He'd forgotten how much Zarius looked like his father. All the better. He would grasp the back of his neck as though to place an intimate kiss, then punch his knife through his sternum. He would wrench the blade and halve his heart. The assassination would be quick, and, Confis realized, remarkably free of malice. Then he would cry out to his men below, command them to secure the imperial precincts. In the space of heartbeats, the empire would be his. He raised his hand for the kiss, but his uncle waved it away and jostled by him, apparently captivated by something farther down the steps.
"And what's this?"
he cried, obviously speaking of the captive. Confis raked his gaze across the onlookers, saw Gain Kelty and several others scrutinizing him warily. Smiling falsely, he turned to join the Emperor.
"Alas, uncle, this is the only captive I have to offer you. Everyone knows Skilvendi make atrocious slaves."
"And who is he?"
The man had been thrust to his knees, and he now leaned over his nakedness, his scarred arms chained behind his back. One of the bodyguards grabbed his black mane and jerked his face to the Emperor. Though the memory of scorn haunted his expression, his gray eyes were vacant, fixed on things not of this world.
"Zunarit," Confis said. "They're king of tribes."
"I'd heard he'd been taken, but I dared not believe the rumors. Confis, Confis, a Skilvendi king of tribes made captive. You've made our house immortal this day. I shall have him blinded, emasculated, and bound to the base of my throne, just like the ancient high kings of Kyrenius."
"A splendid idea, uncle."
Confis glanced to his right and finally saw his grandmother. She wore a green silk gown crisscrossed by a form-hugging sash of blue. As always, she looked like an old whore playing the coquette, but there was something in her expression. She seemed different somehow.
"Confis!" she gasped, her eyes rounded by wonder. "You left us as heir to the Empire, and you've returned to us as a god."
A collective intake of breath followed these words. Treason, or at least something the Emperor was certain to interpret as such.
"You're too kind, Grandmother,"
Confis said hastily.
"I return as a humble slave who's simply done his master's bidding."
"But she's right, isn't she?" Somehow he'd slipped from the brink of striking his uncle down to covering for his grandmother's gaffes. Resolution, he had to stay focused.
"Of course, my dear boy, I spoke figuratively."
In a way curiously obscene for one so old, she sashayed to his side and hooked his knifing arm with her own.
"Shame on you, Confis. I can understand the herd."
She glanced wrathfully at her son's ministers.
"Reading scandal into my words, but you—"
"Must you always dote on him so, Mother?"
Zarius said. He had begun prodding his trophy as though testing for muscle tone. By chance, Confis caught Martimus's gaze from where the man patiently kneeled, so far entirely unacknowledged. The general nodded dangerously. A familiar cool settled upon Confis then, the one that allowed him to think and act with deliberation while other men scrambled. He looked across the seemingly endless ranks of infantrymen below.
"At your command, every soldier."
He detached himself from his grandmother.
"Listen," he said, "there are things I must know."
"Or what?"
his uncle asked. Apparently he'd forgotten the king of tribes, or had his interest been a ruse? Uncowed, Confis stared hard into his uncle's painted eyes, smirked at the absurdity of his Shigeki crown.
"Or we shortly find ourselves at war with the men of the Tusk. Did you know they rioted when I attempted to enter Momim? Killed 20 of my Kidbrahil."
Confis found his eyes straying to his uncle's soft, powdered neck. Perhaps that would be a better place to strike.
"Ah, yes," Zarius said in a dismissive manner. "A most unfortunate incident. Kalmamunis and Tharshilka have been inciting more than just their own men, but I assure you, the matter has been concluded."
"What do you mean, concluded?"
For the first time in his life, Confis cared nothing what his uncle thought of his tone. "Tomorrow," Zorias declared with a voice of decree, "you and your grandmother will accompany me upriver to observe the transport of my latest monument. I know, nephew, that you've a restless nature, that you're a student of decisive action, but you must be patient. This isn't Kaiuth, and we're not the Skilvendi. Things are not as they appear, Confis."
Confis was dumbstruck. "This isn't Kaiuth, and we're not the Skilvendi." What was that supposed to mean?
As though the matter were utterly closed, Zorias continued. "Is this the general you speak so highly of? Martimus, is it? I'm so very pleased he's here. I couldn't ferry enough of your men into the city to fill the campus, so I was forced to use my Eothic guard and several hundred of the city watch."
Though stunned, Confis replied without hesitation.
"And dress them as army regulars?"
"Of course. The ceremony is as much for them as for you, no?"
His heart thundering, Confis knelt and kissed his uncle's knee.
Harmony. So sweet. This was what Icuri Zorias III thought he groped for.
Kemen Khetri, the Grand Master of his imperial sake, had assured him that the circle was the purest of geometrical forms, the one most conducive to the mending of the spirit. One must not live one's life, he had said, in lines. But it was with circles of string that one made knots, and it was with circles of suspicion that one made intrigue. The very shape of harmony was cursed.
"How long must we wait, Zorias?"
his mother asked from behind, her voice throaty with age and irritation.
"The sun is hot, isn't it, bitch mother?"
"Soon," he said to the river. From the prow of his great galley, Zorias stared across the brown waters of the river Phaeus. Behind him sat his mother, the Empress Istria, and his nephew Confis, flush from his astounding destruction of the Skilvendi tribes at Kaiuth. Ostensibly, he had invited them to witness the transport of his latest monument from the basalt quarries of Osbius downriver to Momum, but as always, there were further purposes behind any gathering of the imperial family. They would, he knew, scoff at his monument, his mother openly, his nephew silently. But they would not, could not, dismiss the announcement he would shortly make. The mere mention of the holy war would be enough to command their respect. For a time, anyway. Ever since they'd left the stone keys in Momum, his mother had been fawning over her grandson.
"I burned over 200 golden votives for you," she was saying. "One for each day you were in the field. And I offered 38 dogs to the Gilgaoli priesthood to be slaughtered in your—"
"She even furnished them with a lion," Zorias called over his shoulder. "The albino the Pizathras purchased from that insufferable Kutnami trader, wasn't it, mother?"
Though he could not see her, he could feel her eyes bore into his back.
"That was to be a surprise, Zorias," she said with acidic sweetness. "Or did you forget?"
"I apologize, mother. I quite—"
"I had the hide prepared,"
she said to Confis, as though Zorias had not spoken.
"A suitable gift for the Lion of Kaiuth, no?"
She chuckled at her own conspiratorial wit. Zorias clenched the mahogany rail tight.
"A lion?" Confis exclaimed. "And an albino, no less? Small wonder the god favored me, grandmother."
"A bribe," she replied dismissively. "I was desperate to have you back in one piece, mad with desperation. But now you've told me how you defeated the brutes, I feel foolish, trying to bribe the gods to look after one of their own. The Empire has never seen the likes of you, my dear, sweet Confis, never."
"Whatever wisdom I possess, grandmother, I owe to you." Istria nearly giggled. Flattery, especially from Confis, had always been her favorite narcotic.
"I was a rather harsh tutor, now that I recall."
"The harshest.
But you were tardy all the time, Confis. Waiting always brings out the worst in me. I could claw eyes out."
Zarius gritted his teeth. She knows I listen. She baits me. Confis was laughing.
I'm afraid I discovered the pleasures of women at an atrociously young age, Grandmother. I had other tutors to attend.
Estrella was sly, even flirtatious, the whorish crone.
Lessons drawn from the same book, I imagine.
It all comes to fucking, doesn't it?
Their laughter drowned out the whooshing chorus of the galley's oars. Zorias stifled a scream.
And now with the holy war, my dear Confis, you'll be more, far more, than the greatest exalt general in our history.
What is she trying to do? Estrella had always goaded him, but never had she pressed her banter so close to sedition. She knew Confis's victory over the Skilvendi had transformed him from a tool into a threat, especially after the farce at the forum the previous day. Zarius needed only to glimpse at his nephew's face to know that Skaeus had been right. There had been murder in Confis's eyes. If not for the Holy War, Zarius would have ordered him cut down on the spot. Estrella had been there. She knew all this, and yet she pushed further and further. Was she trying to get Confis killed? Confis was obviously discomfited.
My men would call that counting the dead before blood is drawn, Grandmother.
But was he truly uneasy? Could it be an act? Something concocted by the two of them to throw him off their scent? He peered down the length of the galley, searching for Skaeus. He found him with Arithmaeus, summoned him with a look of fury, but then cursed himself. What need had he of that old fool? His mother played games. She always played games. Ignore them. Skaeus scuttled to his side. The man walked like a crab, but Zarius ignored him. Drawing long, even breaths, he studied the river traffic instead. With sluggish grace, riverboats eased by one another, most of them heavy with wares. He saw the carcasses of swine and cattle, urns of oil and casks of wine. He saw wheat, corn, quarried stone, and even what he decided must be a troop of dancers, all plowing across the river's broad back toward Momum. It was good that he stood upon the faes. It was the great rope from which the vast nets of the Nansorium spread. Trade and the industry of men, all sanctioned by his image. The gold they bear in their hands, he thought, bears my face. He peered into the sky. His eyes settled upon a gull mysteriously suspended in the heart of a distant thunderhead. For a moment, he thought he could feel Harmony's brush, forget the nattering of his mother and nephew behind him. Then the galley lurched and shuddered to a halt. Zarius teetered over the prow for a moment, caught himself. He pushed himself upright, looked wildly for the galley captain among the small herd of functionaries amidships. He heard shouts muffled by the timber, then the snapping of whips. Images came to him unbidden, of cramped and wood-dark spaces, rotten teeth clenched in agony, sweat and stinging pain.
What happened?
Zarius heard his mother ask.
Sandbar, Grandmother,
Confis said in explanation.
Yet another delay, it would seem.
His tone was clenched in impatience, a liberty of expression he would not have dared a few months earlier, but still minor compared with the previous day's outrage. Cries resonated through the tiled deck. The oars made hash of the surrounding waters, but to no effect. With an expression that already begged for mercy, the captain approached and acknowledged that they'd run aground. Zarius berated the fool, all the while sensing his mother's scrutiny. When he glanced at her, he saw eyes far too shrewd to belong to a mother watching her son. At her side, Confis lolled on his divan, smirking as though he watched a fixed cockfight. Unnerved by their scrutiny, Zarius waved away the captain's plaintive explanations.
Why should the rowers reap what you've sown? He cried.
Disgusted by the man's infantile blubbering, he turned his back on him, ordered his bodyguards to drag him below. The man's subsequent howling simply fanned his anger. Why could so few men stomach the consequences of their actions?
A judgment,
his mother said dryly.
worthy of the latter prophet.
We'll wait here,
Zariah snapped to no one in particular. After a moment, the whips and cries subsided. The oars fell silent. There was a rare moment of quiet on the deck. A dog's baying echoed across the waters. Children chased one another along the south bank, ducking between pepper trees, squealing. But there was another sound.
Can you hear them? Confis asked. Yes, I can,
Estrella replied, craning her neck to look upriver. Zorias could also hear it. A faint chorus of shouts across the water. Squinting, he peered into the distance where the Phaeus bent and folded between dark slopes, searching for some visible sign of the barge bearing his new monument. He saw none.
Perhaps, Scaeus whispered in his ear, we should await your latest glory from the galleys aft, God of Men.
He started to rebuke the Prime Council for interrupting him with nonsense, then hesitated.
Continue,
he muttered, studying the old man. Scaeus's face often reminded him of a shriveled apple dimpled by two shiny black eyes. He looked like an ancient infant.
From here, God of Men, your divine memorial will be revealed in increments, allowing your mother and nephew.
His expression was pained. Zarius grimaced, looked askance at his mother.
No one dares taunt the Emperor, Scaeus.
Of course, God of Men, certainly. But if we wait aft, your obelisk will be exposed in one magnificent rush as the barge passes us.
I had considered that.
But certainly.
Zarius turned to the Empress and the Exalt General.
Come, Mother, he said. Let us retire from the sun. Some shade will flatter you.
Estrella scowled at the insult, but seemed visibly relieved otherwise. The sun was high in the sky and hot for the season. She rose with stiff grace and reluctantly took her son's proffered hand. Confis rolled to his feet after her, followed them. Formations of perfumed slaves and functionaries scattered from their path. With Scaeus waiting at a discreet distance, the three paused at tables bedecked with delicacies. Zarius was heartened when his mother complimented his kitchen slaves. Praising his servants had always been her way of repenting earlier indiscretions, her apology. Perhaps, Zarius thought, she would be indulgent with him today. Finally, they settled in the canopied rear of the galley, lounging on Nilnameshi settees. Scaeus stood on Zarius's right, his accustomed position. Zarius found his presence comforting. Like overstrong wine, his family had to be watered down.
And how is my half-sister?
Confis asked him. Janan had commenced.
A satisfactory wife.
And yet her womb remains closed,
Estrella remarked. I have my heir, Zarius replied casually, knowing full well that the old crone celebrated his impotence. The strong seed forces the womb. She had called him weak. Estrella's dark eyes flashed.
Yes, an heir without an inheritance.
Such directness. Perhaps age had at last caught up with immortal Estrella. Perhaps time was the only poison she could not avoid.
Take care, Mother.
Perhaps, and the thought filled Zarius with shrill glee, she would shortly die. Damnable old bitch. Confis interceded.
I think grandmother refers to the men of the Tusk, divine uncle. I received word just this morning that they've raided and sacked Jerutha. We're past riots and trial petitions, uncle. We're on the brink of open warfare.
To the heart of the matter so quickly. It was inelegant, brutish.
What do you intend to do, Zarius?
Estrella asked.
It's not merely your shrewish, sometimes impolitic mother who frets over these portentous events. Even the more dependable houses of the congregate are alarmed. One way or another, we must act.
I've never known you to be impolitic, mother, only to appear so.
Answer me, Zarius, what do you intend to do?
Zarius sighed audibly.
It's no longer a question of intent, mother.
The deed has been accomplished. The Conryan dog, Kalmamunus, has sent envoys. He'll sign the indenture tomorrow afternoon. He gives his personal assurance that the riots and raids end as of today.
Kalmamunus!
His mother hissed as though surprised. In all likelihood, she'd known this before even Zarius himself. After all the years she'd spent plotting for and against husbands and sons, her network of spies plumbed the Nansorium to the pith.
What of the other great names? What of the Enoni? What's his name? Kumreza?
I know only that Kalmamunus confers with him, Tharshilka, and some of the others today. With the air of a bored oracle, Confis said, he'll sign as well.
And what makes you so certain of that? Estrella asked.
Confis raised his bowl, and one of the ubiquitous slaves scurried forward to refill it. All the early arrivals will sign. It should have occurred to me earlier, but now that I think about it, it seems plain that these fools fear the arrival of the others more than anything else. They think themselves invincible. Tell them the Fainim are as terrible in war as the Skilvendi, and they laugh. Remind you, the god himself rides at their side.
So what are you saying?
Estrella asked. Without thinking, Zarius had leaned forward in his settee. Yes, nephew. What are you saying? Confis sipped from his bowl, shrugged. They think triumph has assured them, so why share it? Or even worse, give it away altogether to their undeserving betters. Think. When Nersei Proyas arrives, Kalmamunus will be little more than one of his lieutenants. The same applies to Tharshilka and Kumreza. When the main contingents from Galeoth and High Aenon arrive, they're sure to lose their preeminent positions. As of now, the Holy War's theirs, and they wish to wield.
You must delay the distribution of provisions then, Sirius.
Estrella interrupted.
Prevent them from marching.
Perhaps, Scaeus added, we can tell them we've found weevils in our granaries.
Zarius stared at his mother and nephew, trying to smooth the sneer from his expression. This was where their knowledge ended and where his genius began. Not even Confis, the cunning snake, could anticipate him on this.
No, he said. They march.
Estrella stared at him, her face looking as astonished as her prunish skin would allow.
Perhaps, Confis said, we should dismiss the slaves.
With a clap, Zarius sent oiled bodies fleeing from the deck.
What's the meaning of this, Zarius?
Estrella asked. Her voice quavered, as though robbed of breath by shock. Confis studied him, his lips hooked in a mild smile.
I think I know, Grandmother. Could it be, Uncle, that the Padiraja has asked for a gesture?
Struck mute by astonishment, Zarius gaped at his nephew. How could he have known? Too much penetration and certainly too much ease of manner. At some level, Zarius had always been terrified of Confis. It was more than just the man's wit. There was something dead inside his nephew. No, more than dead, something smooth. With others, even with his mother, although she too had seemed so remote lately, there was always the exchange of unspoken expectations, of the small human needs that crotched and braced all conversation, even silences. But with Confis, there were only sheer surfaces. His nephew was never moved by another. Confis was moved by Confis, even if at times in mimicry of being moved by others. He was a man for whom everything was a whim. A perfect man.
But to master such a man, and master him, he must.
Flatter him, Scaeus had once told Zarius, and be transformed into part of the glorious story that he sees as his life. But he could not. To flatter another was to humble oneself.
How did you know this?
Zarius snapped. His fear added, need I send you to Ziek to find out? The Tower of Ziek. Who in Nansur failed to shudder when they glimpsed it, rising from the congestion of Momim? His nephew's eyes hardened for a moment. He had been moved. And why not? Confis had been threatened. Zarius laughed.
Estrella's sharp voice interrupted his mirth.
How could you joke about such things, Arias?
Had he been joking? Perhaps he had. Forgive my uncouth humor, mother, but Confess has guessed right. Guessed a secret so deadly that it would destroy us all, if... He paused, turned back to Confess. This is why I must know how you anticipated this. Confess was wary now.
Because it's what I would do.
Scholars, nay, Kian, needs to understand that we're not fanatics. Scholars. Hawk-faced Scholars. There was an old name. The shrewd Kianine Sapatishah governor of Shigek and the first leathery obstacle to be overcome by the Holy War. How little the men of the Tusk understood the lay of the land between the rivers Phaeus and Sempus. Nansor and Kian had been at intermittent war for centuries. They knew each other intimately, had sealed countless truces with lesser daughters. How many spies, ransoms, even hostages? Zorias shot forward, scrutinizing his nephew. An image of Scaurus's ghostly face superimposed over that of the Kisharim emissary floated before his soul's eye.
Who told you?
He asked with abrupt intensity. As a youth, Confess had spent 4 years as a hostage of the Kianine, in Scaurus's court no less. Confess looked at the floral mosaics beneath his sandaled feet.
Scaurus himself,
he finally said, looking directly at Zorias. There was a playfulness in his demeanor, but that of a game played by oneself. I've never broken off communication with his court, but surely your spies have told you this. And Zorias had worried about his mother's resources.
You must be wary of such things, Confess,
Estrella said maternally.
Scaurus is one of the old Kianine, a desert man, as ruthless as he's clever. He would use you to sow dissension among us if he could. Remember always, it's the dynasty that is important, House Aikuri.
Those words. Tremors spilled into Zorias's hands. He clasped them together, attempted to gather his thoughts, looked away from their wolfish faces. All those years ago, fumbling with a small black vial the size of a child's finger, pouring the poison into his father's ear. His father. And his mother's... No, Estrella's voice thundering in his thoughts.
The dynasty, Zorias, the dynasty.
Her husband, she decided, had neither claw nor fang enough to keep the dynasty alive. What was happening here? What were they doing? Plotting? He glanced at the old adulterate witch, wanting to have her killed. But for as long as he could remember, she had been the totem, the sacred fetish that held the mad machinery of power in place. The old, insatiable empress alone was indispensable. Those times in his youth when she had awakened him in the heart of night, stroking his cock, tormenting him with pleasure, cooing into his tongue-wet ear.
Emperor Zorias, can you feel it, my lovely godlike son?
She had been so beautiful then. It had been across her hand that he'd first come, and she'd taken his seed and bid him taste it.
The future, she had said, tastes of salt. And it stings, Arias, my lovely child.
That warm laugh that had wrapped cold marble with comfort.
Taste how it stings.
Do you see? Estrella was saying. Do you see how it troubles him? This is what Scaurus hopes for.
Confess had been watching him carefully. I'm not a fool, grandmother, and no heathen living could make me a fool either, especially Scaurus. Nevertheless, I do apologize, Uncle. I should have told you this earlier. Zorias looked at both of them blankly. Outside, the sun was fierce, bright enough to press the pattern stitched into the red canopy across the interior. Animals entwined in circles around the black sun seal of Nansur. Everywhere, throughout the sanguine shade of the canopy, across furniture, floor, and limb, the son of the empire ringed by incestuous beasts. 1,000 sons, he thought, feeling himself calm, across all the old provinces. 1,000 sons,
Our ancient strongholds will be retaken. The Empire will be restored.
Compose yourself, my son, Estrya was saying. I know you're not so foolish as to suggest that Kalmamunus and the others march against the Kianine, or that sacrificing all the men of the Tusk gathered so far is the gesture my grandson refers to. That would be madness, and the Emperor of Nansur is not mad. Is he, Zarius?
During this time, the shouts they'd heard earlier had been growing nearer. Zarius stood and walked to the starboard rail. Leaning, he saw the first of the barge-towing longboats creep from behind the distant banks. He glimpsed the rowers like the spine of a centipede. Their backs flashed in the sun. Soon. He turned to his mother and nephew, then glanced at Skaos, who was wooden in the way of accidental interlopers.
The Empire covets what it has lost, Zarius said wearily. Nothing more. And it will sacrifice anything, even a holy war, to gain what it covets.
So easily said. Such words were the world in small.
You are mad, Estrya cried. So you'll send these first outlanders to their deaths? Have the holy war, simply to show thrice-damned Scorus you're not a religious lunatic? You squander fortunes, Arias, and you tempt the endless wrath of the gods.
The violence of her response shocked him, but it mattered little what she thought of his plans. It was Confis he needed. Zarius watched him. After a stern moment of deliberation, Confis slowly nodded and said, I see.
You see reason in this?
Confis shot Zarius an appraising look.
Think, grandmother. Far more men are set to arrive than those who've gathered so far. True great names such as Sorbon, Proyas, even Kefaramuni, King Regent of High Aenon. But more important, it would seem the vulgar masses have been the first to answer Maethanet's call, those ill-prepared, stirred by sentiment more than the sober spirit of war. To lose this rabble would be to our advantage in innumerable ways. Fewer stomachs to feed, a more cohesive army in the field. He paused and turned to Zarius with what could only be described as wonder in his eyes, or something near to it. And it would teach the Shrier and those who follow to fear the Fainim. Their dependence upon us, upon those who already respect the heathen, will grow with a measure of their fear. Madness!
Estrya spat, unmoved by her grandson's defection.
What? Do we then war against the Kianine under the conditions of some secret treaty? Why should we give them anything now when we're at last in a position to seize, to break the back of a hated foe? And you would parley with them? Say, I will lop off this and that limb, but no other? Madness!
But are we in such a position, grandmother? Confis replied, the filial deference now absent from his tone.
Think! Who's we here? Certainly not the Aikyori. We means the Thousand Temples. Maethanet swings this hammer, or have you forgotten, while we merely scramble to pocket the pieces. Maethanet beggars us, grandmother. So far he's done everything in his power to geld us. That's why he invited the Scarlet Spires, is it not? To avoid paying the price we demand for the Imperial sake?
Spare me your picture-book explanations, Confis. I'm not yet such an old doddering fool.
She turned to Zarius, glared at him with scathing eyes. His amusement must have been plain.
So, Kalmamunus, Tharshilka, and countless thousands of others are destroyed. The herd is culled. What then, Zarius?
Zarius could not help smiling. Such a plan. Even the great Aikyori Confis was in awe. And Maethanet? The thought made Zarius want to chortle like an imbecile.
What then? Our Shrier learns fear, respect. All his mummery, all his sacrifices, hymns, and wheedling will have been for naught. As you said earlier, Mother, the gods cannot be bribed.
But you can!
Zarius laughed.
Of course I can. If Maethanet commands the great names to sign my indenture, to swear the return of all the old provinces to the Empire, then I will give them.
He turned to his nephew and lowered his head.
The line of Caiuth.
Splendid! Confis cried. Why didn't I see it? Thrash them with one hand in order to soothe them with the other. Brilliant, uncle. The Holy War will be ours. The Empire will be restored.
The Empress stared at her progeny dubiously.
What do you say, mother?
But Astraea's gaze had drifted to the Prime Council.
You've been awfully silent, Scarce. It's not my place to speak, Empress. No? Well, this mad scheme is yours, isn't it?
It's mine, mother.
Zarius snapped, irked by her assumption.
The wretch has spent tedious weeks trying to talk me out of it.
Even as he gave breath to these words, he knew he'd blundered.
Is that so? And why is that, Scarce? As much as I despise you and the inordinate influence you have over my son, I've always found your thinking sound. What insights have you to shed?
Scaeus stared at her helplessly, said nothing.
You fear for your life, don't you, Scaeus?
Astraea said mildly.
As you should. My son's justice is harsh and utterly devoid of consistency, but I'm not afraid, Scaeus. Old women are more reconciled to death than old men. By bringing life to the world, we come to see ourselves as debtors. What's given is taken.
She turned to her son, her lips pursed in a predatory smile.
Which leads me to my point. From what Confis says, Zarius, you give the Fainim little, if anything at all, by giving them the first half of the Holy War.
Biting back his fury, Zarius replied,
Surely 100,000 lives is more than a little, mother.
Ah, but I speak of practicalities, Zarius. Confis says these men are dross. More an impediment than an advantage. Since Scaurus undoubtedly knows this as well, I ask you, my dear sweet son, what has he demanded in return? I know what you take, so tell me. What have you given?
Zaria stared at her pensively. Memories of his meeting with the Kishorum Malahet and his arcane negotiations with Scaurus flashed before his soul's eye. How cold that summer night now seemed, cold and hellish.
The Empire will be restored, at all costs.
Let me,
Astraea continued,
make it simple for you, Tell me where the line falls, Arias. Tell me where the second, useful half of the Holy War of necessity falters.
Zarius locked eyes with Confis. He saw the hated, knowing smirk that resided nowhere in his face, but found agreement there, the only place he really needed it. What was Shaima compared with the Empire? What was Faith compared with Imperial power? Confis had sided with the Empire, with him. Suddenly the air seemed musky with his mother's humiliation. He relished it.
This is war, mother. As in a game of number sticks, who can say what triumphs or catastrophes lie in the future?
The Grand Empress stared at him for a long while, her face disconcertingly blank beneath its skin of cosmetics.
Shaima,
she said at last in a dead voice.
The Holy War is to perish before Shaima.
Zaria smiled, then shrugged. He turned back to the river. By now, the rowers' shouts were rifling the sky, and the first of the longboats was passing by. Trailing long ropes of hemp, they towed a great lumbering barge, so immense it seemed to bow the shining back of the river. He could see the black monument cradled in timbers, as long on its back as Momum's gates were tall. A great obelisk for the temple complex of Kamiril in Momum. As it plowed before him, it seemed he could feel the erotic warmth of basalt in the sun, radiating from the great plains and the massive profile of his face, the terrible visage of Icuri Zarius III at the pinnacle. He felt his heart overflow and real tears spilled down his cheeks. He envisaged the monument being raised in the heart of Kamiril amid thousands of wondering eyes, its imperial countenance turned forever to the white sun. A shrine. His thoughts leapt.
I will be immortal.
He returned to his settee and reclined, consciously savoring the flares of hope and pride. Oh, sweet godlike vanity.
Like an immense sarcophagus, his mother said.
Always the asp of truth.